Hello and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the shows that shaped our childhood. And more importantly, listeners, welcome to 2025. New Year, same bullshit on this network. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my partner in podcasting, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And we are joined by a very special guest from Better Than Mario Brothers, the inimitable Miss Helen McIntyre.
All right.
And Helen's joining us because we're looking back at, well, it's not a show this episode, it's a movie, really. I guess for us, it would have been a cartoon special, right? The idea was we were going to do this before Christmas, but I had some shit go on that screwed our schedule up, so we didn't get around to it, so we've pushed it back to the new year. But this was one that Helen brought up. She was like, does anybody remember this fucking film about this guy with a plate on his head? And he turns out to, and we were like, no. Mark and I were just like, no, this rings no bells with us whatsoever, to the point where we were actually starting to wonder if Helen had just had some sort of weird fucking fever dream.
Yeah, so, I mean, the way you described it, it sounded familiar, but when you then found it and told us the name of it, it was completely fucking different to the thing I thought it was. So whatever the hell I was thinking of, I have no idea.
So bear in mind, I've got a twin. So a lot of the stuff that I watched as a child, the two of us watched at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And generally speaking, we're pretty much in sync with like the shows that we remember and the shows that we don't. And this has been something that I swear to God, for like more than 30 years, I've been bringing up to her. And I'm just like, what was the name of the show where this happened? And she always... Always was like, it's Ulysses 31. I'm like, it's not Ulysses 31. It is absolutely not Ulysses 31. I know what Ulysses 31 is. This is something different. And she just gaslit me into oblivion. And she's just like, no, Helen, you're wrong. And I was just like, no, the fucking aardvark, and the child's on the aardvark, and then the aardvark dies and he gets killed and he's got a thing on his head and he steal. And it messed me up as a child. I was fixated on it. Fucking. And so when you actually found it, I was so pleased because my mum's been down this weekend and I had a conversation and I said, do you remember this show? And she's like, oh, it sounds vaguely familiar. I vaguely remembered this. And we were working out the timescale and it was a case of, I was like, I would have watched this in infant school.
Yeah.
And my mum was like, oh, I'm not sure if that would have been appropriate. I was just like, it's fine.
It's the 80s.
Like, there's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing in it that's not suitable for kids. And bear in mind, she brought me up on 2001 A Space Odyssey at like 18 months old. But what was really interesting with watching this is like the whole Mandela effect is there's things that I thought was in this. Like I thought there was a scene where you saw the actual like stinger go into the head. That doesn't happen. But then the whole plot that was going on with all of the other people and all of like the politics stuff went over my little like 5-year-old brain completely.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was just like, oh shit, there was a lot of stuff. That was the thing that just stuck with me. And I was like so confused.
I mean, we talk about the Mandela effect a lot on this show. It's something that happens a hell of a lot when we look back at these shows. I obviously don't have that with this because I have no memory of this show. I am certain that I wouldn't have watched this as a kid. And the reason I know that is because I would have absolutely fucking adored this if I saw it as a kid. This is right up my street. I would have absolutely loved it. So I'm certain I've never seen it before. So I'm not going to have the Mandela effect, which is quite interesting for me. I think this is the first time on this show that we've got something that I've never watched. We've had a few that Mark's never watched because I'm just that little bit older. But yeah. I've never come into something completely fresh. But yeah, when you were describing it to us, like at first I was just like, is she making this up? But I can see Fiona's kind of take on it being like, I can see how you'd confuse it with Ulysses 31. Thematically they are quite similar, stylistically very similar.
Yes.
Yeah,
I can see how she would make that leap. So like, yeah, in fairness, plus, you know, marketers, everything's the fucking same in it.
Like,
New Year,
don't get
same
me wrong,
bullshit.
It's in space and there's people on a spaceship and they've got like a quest to do and you're like, oh, that's Ulysses 31 because that was the big one. But I was like, no, this was a different, I was so adamant. And like, this is really good vindication because this has burnt its way onto my brain. Like this has been something that has been, I would say, borderline formulaic with like my approach to sci-fi.
Mm.
Yeah. Like for the whole of my life. And like, I've got like this proper thing with like time travel and things like that comes from this show. So this was great to rewatch, even if they did crop it a bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's just put our cards on the table, listeners. We've watched this illegally, all of us. You know, we advocate,
there was no other way to watch it.
Yeah, there simply was no other way. You know, we always advocate for paying for your content on this show. You know, make sure the people that made this stuff are getting their dues, because a lot of them struggle for work these days. But this thing is just unavailable. Like, the French version, the original, because it was originally a French film, that's available, again, illegally, but it's more widely available. Whereas the English dub, which is what we specifically wanted because that's what Helen remembered, was incredibly hard to track down, to the point where we didn't actually find it until about 4 days ago. And then we all just had to watch it. But we did watch it on a screen the size of a postage stamp as a result. But hey, them's the breaks. And like Helen said, in the 80s, that's what we would have done. It would have been a little portable TV in our bedroom somewhere that we ended up watching this thing on. So it was kind of fitting in a way.
Yeah, I mean, just while you're on that, I mean, I've just got the wiki page in front of me. It's only ever been released in 4 territories for home DVD. So if there's a French edition released in 2004 with no English dub and no English subtitles. A German edition came out in 2010. Again, no English at all. There's an out-of-print single edition disc released in the US, which was in French with English subtitles. And then there was a widescreen French version with English subtitles released in 2007. None of them are available anywhere, from what I can see.
Yeah.
And
so
not just here, anywhere internationally either.
So if you do want to watch this, listeners, like, yeah, you've got to dive into the deep, dark areas.
You've
got to
work for it.
Unfortunately, yeah, you've got to work for this one. I will say,
yeah, bear in mind, I was looking for this for like almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Not quite, but we're talking, I have been searching for this for almost 40 years, and it got to the stage where I was starting to question it, but the memory was so vivid. I was just like, I did not make this up. I swear to God this exists, but I was beginning to doubt.
Yeah. I mean, we were all beginning to doubt you when you were describing it, and we were like, what the fuck? This sounds insane. But sure enough.
But then again, it was the 80s.
It was the 80s. It is pretty out there. It is pretty fucking mad. It manages to straddle the line quite well, though. I think it stays just on the right side of believability. They manage to keep the wheels just about on the wagon, to the point where I had a fucking great time with it. I thought this was fucking brilliant. I think what's interesting for me coming back and watching this now as an adult is I can see how, as a kid, I would have absolutely loved it, just because stylistically this was my jam. You know, we've talked about this on this show many times.
It looks gorgeous.
It looks gorgeous. I mean, it's fucking Mobius. I didn't, it, like, which amazes me that I didn't know it existed for that reason, if nothing else. The fact that it's a Mobius joint is just bonkers, that it's vanished into obscurity. But I mean, when you look at it, you can very clearly see that it is. It's got those really like clean lines. There's no shading or anything. Everything's a nice clean color. I mean, it looks beautiful. It moves beautifully as well. The animation is stunning, particularly for the 80s. And it was an independent flick as well, so it's not like there was tons of money being thrown at it. Like, yeah, we've got... They're not working on singles most of the time. There are some repeated frames and stuff, but it looks pretty fluid most of the time. You know, it does a really good job. I was particularly impressed. There's a scene about a third of the way through, well, maybe a little bit earlier than that, where, look, and I'm going to forget all these character names, all right, so I'm just going to call them as they are, like the old pirate, like the kid when he's older, like, there's a scene where you first see him, like, singing to the kid, and he's, like, playing a guitar and singing, and, like, if you didn't care about this product at all, or if you were trying to turn it on a quick buck, that is the exact point where you'd Hanna-Barbera this shit, and you would just have the mouth moving repeatedly in the same way, and you would have the fingers playing the same chords. Oh, no. No, they animate that shit. Like, he's playing that guitar. That's pretty fucking impressive. That's a lot of work for a very short scene. Like, that's attention to detail. So I was pretty impressed with all of that. And then just the fact that it's this fucking mad kind of existential time travel sci-fi. And like you say, Helen, there's all the politics in there as well. There's the stuff with the fucking... with the consciousness of the angels and stuff like that, and everybody has been absorbed into the whole. It helps that I came into this straight off the back of finishing Baldur's Gate 3, so that stuff was all sitting very, like, at the forefront of my mind anyway. So I was getting, like, big Elder Brain vibes from that. But, yeah, all in all, I thoroughly enjoyed it. As a kid, I would have watched it and just thought, like, as you said, Helen, all of this would have washed straight over me. I don't think I'd have been able to follow this story as a kid. I wouldn't have had a fucking clue what was going on. But I watched a load of shit as like a 9-10-year-old kid looked like this that I had no clue what the fuck was going on. I just loved it because it was spaceships and laser guns and black holes and wormholes. And like that was my jam. Some people are into Wizards and Dragons. I'm not. I'm into fucking black holes and laser guns and always have been.
Yeah.
So this, this would have absolutely
You know, sci-fi is my first love.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Like,
but then, again, when I was 18 months old, my mum said the only way that she could get me to be, like, quiet so she could have... Bear in mind there's two of us and she's on her own because my dad is, like, off working at the other end of the country because West Highland man doesn't do babies. The only way that she could get, like, a minute to breathe and think to herself was to put on 2001 A Space Odyssey. And she was just like, your sister couldn't be asked, but you in particular, especially when you get the sequence at the end where all of the time collapses in on itself. She's like, you were so transfixed by that. That was your thing. And I was just like, yeah, if you combine that with this thing, it makes so much sense as to, like, where I go with stories and just what my taste is. Like, this really had a formative effect on me to the, again, because it was, and it was burnt in there. And I was, the thing that got, that really surprised me when I was watching it was that opening shot where they're in the sort of the Land Cruiser that looks like a bug. And it's the instant that it started, that came in, I was just like, fuck yes, yes, this is it. This is 100% exactly what I remember. And I was just like, so a lot of the plot I didn't remember, but the visuals, the visuals stayed with me. And that says something about the strength of it because that animation holds up.
Oh yeah, it does. And
it
really
does.
Yeah.
That's the best part of this show. Like, we often watch stuff like that on here, and sometimes you watch stuff and narratively it's absolute horseshit, but there are just these little nuggets of nostalgia that just hit you, and it's just the most amazing thing when you see it and you go, ah, yes, right, and you're fucking 10 years old again. And I wish that I had that with this. I really do. I wish I had watched this as a child because I really enjoyed watching it, but I think this would have definitely taken me on a complete trip like it would have with you if I'd have watched this as a child at all. The nearest, it's interesting because you've already like brought it up with Fiona, but the nearest thing I can place on it that I would probably have had that reaction to would be Ulysses 31. When we look back at that show, like the second the intro started, I was just like, oh yes, this is it. This is amazing. This is exactly how I remember it. And I can see how this would have the same effect. But you would have watched this, I guess, on BBC. It was a BBC jam over here.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was BBC co-production.
So I guess this must have been the kind of shit that was just dumped on an afternoon at Christmas time and Easter, right? Because it's too long. It's too long to have been on, like, CBBC or to have been on
Saturday
Morning
Show. Well,
it
looks like they only aired it twice. They aired it once in 1987 and once in 1991. So
It wasn't the 91 version that I saw. I think they said something like the English dub was initially dubbed in 1984.
Yes, that's the info that I've got.
But I think that's what it's only aired on BBC in 87, but it may have come from elsewhere if it was on the tape or something like that.
So I know that I'd seen it when I was, as I said, like this, like prior to me being in junior school, that I'd seen it once. Because it was the second time that I watched it, and I remembering having seen it before, which was why I was so convinced about, as I said, the certain bits that had stuck out to me, particularly the whole time thing that happens to that small child. And as I said, like, that was one of these things that just constantly, like, has ticked over in my brain ever since then. I wouldn't have been 91 that I would have seen it, but probably the 87 when I would have seen it as well. Yeah. But as sort of said, again, that would have been, you know, I would have been 5-6, so I still would have been infant school.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a case of I saw it twice, and that was because I know that I definitely saw it more than once.
I mean, I'm not sure what your parents were like. I mean, certainly with us, anything like that was on TV, they instantly record it, and then we'd watch it until the tape wore out.
I was just about to say the same. And that's what I would have done with this. Absolutely. Yeah. This would have been recorded, probably because my dad would have wanted to watch it as well, to be fair. So this would have been recorded. And then once I'd seen it once and liked it, it was like, no, we will keep this. We'll break the tab on the tape and I will watch it until it snaps. But it amazes me that not only did we not record it in my house, but like, My close friends when I was a kid as well, like, we were all into the same shit. We were all, like, sci-fi nuts, right? We were watching fucking Alien and Blade Runner while everybody else was watching fucking Star Wars. We were, like, properly into hardcore sci-fi. And it amazes me that they never, and I didn't see it at their house either, because if they'd have taped it, they would have been like, come and watch this. Like, you've got to see this fucking thing. So it amazes me that they completely bypassed us. So it does just make me wonder, like, what did BBC do with it? Because it feels like it would have been dumped, like I say, in the middle of the afternoon on, like, Boxing Day or something like that, where you would have at least had, a passing knowledge of it.
Yeah, but you'd have seen it was on and then sort of sat down and gone,
they'll have showed an advert for it or some shit. And I just wonder whether it was actually dumped on at like 2 a.m. or some stupid shit like that where nobody saw it and it just happened to be recorded. I don't know. But it baffles me that this has bypassed me completely for fucking 43 years. Like, because it ticks so many of my boxes and I've just never even heard of it. Until you mentioned it and we took the deep dive, and then I started, like, once we started uncovering it, I was like, holy shit, like, Mobius is involved with this. And then, like, I got into the music and the soundtrack as well, and I'm like, this is fucking amazing. So this is a real kind of hidden gem. I'd be interested to know, like, how many of our listeners out there have actually seen this before compared to, like, some of the other shit that we look at. Like, if we were to rag on this, how many complaints would we get, right? Because if I was to rag on, as we know, if I was to stick the boot into Raggy Dolls right now, all hell would break loose. I don't think that would be the same with this, and that's kind of sad. But I would be interested to know, because I bet you the people that do like it, like, really fucking like it. I bet you they're, like, I would imagine so. Defensive of it.
I bet you they're like me, because the thing is... the visuals are so strong that they, because the bit where he, as I said, like, because this was the image that I described to you, was there's a child and he's blonde and he's got the shaggy hair and he's on the aardvark and he's sat there and he's, I forgot that he was holding the microphone. I was like unclear, but I was like, he's got something in his hands and he's riding this thing and there's a bunch of people that are coming to rescue him. But that image there, I was like, that was it. And it's a case of, like, literally the, you could take the still of that and that is exactly what my memory was of it. So but nobody, and, like, bear in mind we all sort of move in quite sort of filmy circles and we've all done the sort of the film school thing and the talking to other people that are sort of learning about it and that got the sort of the cult tastes and stuff. And I brought this up with them and I was just like, does anybody else remember this show? And nobody, like, tumbleweed, and everyone just sort of looked at me and they're just like, you all right, Helen? I'm just like, fuck no.
I do wonder though if there are more people out there that have just got, like, Fiona's response to it, because
they've just assumed it's something else.
They've mashed it into something else,
because it's got you've got Ulysses, possibly even Voltron in the style of it. It's got that kind of, not quite anime, but that definitely kind of, it's almost like a French-Canadian feel to the animation that you see in a lot of the kind of the Filmation things and, that, you know, your Willy Foggs and stuff like that. It's got that kind of feel to it, right? So the way it looks, and you then combine that with the sci-fi aesthetic, and it does land you strictly into, like, Ulysses and Voltron and maybe even Jace and those sorts of things that you could easily get mixed up with.
I think, so the thing is because I am a visual thinker and I, like, visual things are always, like, my response. The reason why I knew it wasn't Ulysses 31 is Ulysses 31 as a color palette to me is like blues and greens and purples. And it's like these cool sort of, like, traditional sci-fi colors. Whereas this, it's golds and it's reds and it's those yellows and it's those sepias. And because it's got such a sort of a warm, almost sort of like burnt out color palette, that was why I knew. When people said, oh, it's these other shows, I was like, no, the colours are wrong. The colours are wrong. It's the colours are so distinctive with this. Like, even the skin tones of, like, the sort of sort of the adult characters that you see in all of them. There's been a really clear, like, design choice that's been made with this palette that carries all the way through, that normally you'd sort of see in something that was, I mean, maybe He-Man, but it's almost sort of like a Conan the Barbarian type color palette, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's Mobius is what it is. I mean, you'd see it in Heavy Metal, which is where you're getting your Conan vibes from. It's Mobius. That's his look.
And also the lines and the framing and the composition.
Such clean lines and you know, very harshly lit, no real, shadow as such. There's no yeah. cross hatching, no shading. No, it's very, very clean. And yeah, it does have that kind of, you're right, that almost earthy kind of color palette to it.
Yeah.
It is Mobius. It's unmistakable when you know his style and you know what you're looking for. As soon as it starts, you're like, oh yes, okay. And you know, maybe that's if you are speaking to some sort of more film educated people or people who are more into comic book culture, maybe that's the way that you kind of sell that to move them off Ulysses. You say, no, this was designed by Mobius, so it doesn't look like Ulysses, because Ulysses is kind of aping that. That's what it's doing. That's the look it's going for. It's very much copying that aesthetic. But yes, it's got the Star Wars palette. It is like dark black of space and blue stars and blue lasers and on all of that. And it's also like the swishy capes and stuff like that. But I think there's probably also an element of confusion that comes in there with Ulysses as well, where you get the little, what do they call them? Gnomes, I think they call them, that hatch from the...
The little telepathic things.
Yeah, yeah. Because they feel like they fit right into an episode of Ulysses or something like that as well. So I can definitely see it. And we spent so much time on that ship as well. Yeah. We spent so much of this film on that ship talking in basically pseudoscience, which is what proper science fiction should do. I'm not complaining about that. But it is, it's got that kind of slow-paced narrative where it's like, no, we're on a rescue mission, but we're also on a spaceship, so we're going very fucking slowly, and we need to find like a comet or something to slingshot ourselves, because physics, right? And I fully am behind the commitment to that. It's not just like we can't hit a warp drive and just get there. That's not how it works. Unless you can manage to send the planet back in time 60 years when we get to the end. But whatever, hand waving in it, we're at the end then, doesn't matter.
By that point, you're an hour and change in, and it doesn't really matter anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that is the only point where I did call a little bit of bullshit, and it got away with it because I'd had so much fun with it up until that point. But I did kind of feel like, we needed a little bit more setup here. But having done the reading, it was based on a novel. It's quite possible that there is a lot more seeded in there that just didn't make the transition. Plus, of course, we watched a dub version. So, again, it's entirely possible that in the French original, which I am definitely going to go back and watch, that may be seeded better as well. But whatever. I mean, it worked. The ending worked. I was just a bit like, hey, what now? Because all the way through, I was kind of going like, where are the Time Masters?
Well, yeah, that was the thing that got me. Where's this coming from?
Yeah.
And I've got to be honest, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. So I started watching it on Sunday and then had to stop. So I've rewatched it again this evening. And that was the initial thought I had in it was that it may have been served better by breaking it into installments rather than because there's so much goes on.
Mm.
And there are so many sort of subplots, especially with Jafar and the people traveling to rescue him, that you could have quite easily done 3-4 installments. And had the same effect, but then by the time you get to the end wouldn't have worked if you'd done that.
No,
and it was only when we got to the end I thought, actually, yeah, if you'd structured it differently, that end wouldn't have worked at all. I mean, it was a stretch for me anyway, the end, but it was you then try and go, actually, we've built up for 4 episodes, 5 episodes, where it's going to be, and then they do that,
yeah,
and you just kind of feel a little bit cheated. So that, from that perspective, I think that's when that decision paid off to make it a film as opposed to as a miniseries.
I think there's just kind of, there's an automatic reaction, I think, particularly amongst people of our generation and older, where when you get something that's even vaguely space opera like this, you automatically just go, oh, this needs to be a serial. Because that's what we're used to, right? Because that's what Ulysses is. And really, that's what Star Wars is over the course of like 9 films now or whatever it is, right? So you're used to seeing it in a serialized format. You're not used to seeing one and done. And so I think there's part of that as well. Again, Ulysses is the prime case in point there, where it's got like a couple of seasons to tell its story and still doesn't manage to fully do it. I think there's a little bit of that. But I think ultimately I'm glad that it is a film, because I think even though I don't have nostalgia for it because I didn't watch it, I've got nostalgia for this type of thing. I've talked about this several times on on this show and on Better Than Mario as well. But this is the type of thing that I would have got from the video shop as a child. This is the type of thing that would have been like a £1.50 rental, like not in with your Blockbusters and stuff. It was the kind of stuff that you could reliably know would always be on the shelf. So if you went in on like a school holiday because like your mum just wanted you to shut up, so you got to go to the video shop, like you could pick up Time Masters and you'd probably rent it like 6 or 7 times in a row because you liked it. And that's what it feels like to me. It's one of those things, one of those like little animated specials that you would just pick up. And I mean, the last thing I think I talked about like that, which is nowhere comparable in quality or theme, Mark, was when we did Mad Balls. And when I was talking about renting the Mad Balls video over and over and over again because the video shop had it. But it's got that kind of vibe to it for me. Of not so much something that I would see on TV, but something that I would go into the video shop. And it wouldn't be in the good video shop. It would be in the shit one.
No. Yeah, one in the back of the newsagents.
Yeah, exactly. It would be the one, you go to the newsagents, you go downstairs and all the videos are in the basement and like all the cases are mashed up and stuff. Like, it would be in that video shop, not the really good one that had like 4 copies of everything. So I am glad that it's a film because it gives me that. That's what I felt like when I watched it. Whereas if it had been a TV show, I wouldn't have got that little nostalgia trip from it. So
And that's fair. I think for me it was just because there was so many plot strands that it just felt like a lot. But so once you got to the end, it kind of went, oh yeah, I kind of get it now. I was glad all the way through. I was thinking they should have done, they could have broken it there. But when I got to the end, I was like, actually, if they'd done that, I would have ruined it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the beauty of like actual sci-fi as well, right? When you've got really good sci-fi and you can have multiple plot strands going on at once and you can have these kind of long meditative scenes almost in some cases that will just go nowhere because it's science fiction and it's about just musing on who we are and why we're here and existentialism and physics and all of that. And there's a lot of that in here. A lot of it just feels like, hey, here's an idea. We'll talk about it for 10 minutes and now we're done. That's our thoughts on that. Let's move on to the next thing. And now here's our thoughts on this. So let's move on to the next thing. And it's, you can get away with that in sci-fi like this because they're stuck on a spaceship. What else are they going to do? Sit around and talk bollocks? Like that's...
Well, yeah, that's it.
It's what you're going to do, right? All right. Occasionally they get to go off and go for a swim so we can get like some pervy shots of the princess's ass and stuff. But, you know, again...
Yeah, I didn't remember that bit.
Again, Mobius. Like, it looks straight out of Heavy Metal, really. If she was wearing like a furry bikini or something instead of a little swimsuit, that's what you'd be looking at. But then, you know, you have that initial bit on the planet. So you have the escape from the bugs to begin with, and they crash the car and he has to go to the forest, and there's a little story there to set you up. But then we go and meet the characters and we've got all the stuff with the politics of the prince and his homeworld, and he's stolen the treasure and he can't ever go back there and the police are after him and all of this. And then they throw that away for a bit because then we get into the pirate's story and the hatching of the thing with all the fucking whatever they call them. I forgot what they call them again. But with those little things in there, and that's a story for a little bit. And then we get into the fucking angels and that's a story for a bit, and then the police come and that's a story for a bit, and it's got all of this going on. And again, you feel like if you were to read the original text, there's probably a lot more substance and all of that, but it was a case of, well, let's just adapt it as best we can, let's throw in as much of this as we can and do it. And I think, to be fair, they give all of it just enough room to breathe. There was none of it where I just thought, oh, that was pointless, you know. They all of it kind of goes somewhere and adds something to the narrative. Nothing ever felt like it was just like, nah, we'll fuck around with this for a bit because it's in the source text, you know? So I think that was quite, particularly inside of, what is it, an hour and 40 minutes, I think, something like that, hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes. It's not very long.
An hour and 20, isn't it?
Is it hour and 20? Wow, okay. It felt a little bit longer than that. Not in a bad way. But maybe that's because I was watching it whilst I was also trying to get ready to go out, and I was a little bit buzzed, so maybe I wasn't quite keeping track of time as I should have been. So I don't know, it just felt a little bit longer. It's not something I think I would have and like I said, understood at all as a kid, and it's not something I think I can recommend to children either. Like some of the shows we watch on here, we love them because like you've got these wonderful, warm, fuzzy childhood memories, and it's not like it's unsuitable. Like it's not particularly violent. Even the Hornet attack at the end, like you say, Helen, you had the memory of like the stinger going.
Yeah,
on. That doesn't happen. No. He just gets a tiny little hole in the top of his head, and then the pirate guy comes and does some awful shooting. Like absolutely,
yeah.
That was the one point where I was just like, "Oh no, this animation's pretty poor." Like when he's doing his combat roles and stuff, that looks pretty fucking shoddy. But like, I think most kids, unless you're a nerd like me and apparently Helen, like most kids would be bored as fuck by this. I think is the problem. I certainly couldn't put it on for my daughter, for instance. She would lose interest in like 30 seconds of this.
Yeah.
Because she'd be like, it's not flashy enough. It's not exploding, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I could possibly get away with it with number two for about half of it and then he'd give up.
I think it's just too deep, isn't it? I think if you get them at just the right age, I think, as you said, Helen, if you're about maybe 5 or 6, something like that, then they'll just watch it because it's animation.
Yeah.
So they're not bothered about following the story at all. But then the problem is, like I say, it's not particularly flashy. The little robot-y things are cute. So they, you know, maybe they'd hold attention for a little bit. But it's definitely, like, it's got ideas above its station for a film in the early 80s, for an animated film like this. Like, it's not pitched at children at all. I bet the BBC did market it that way. You know, it was probably a family film. Because it was animation.
I'd imagine so.
We're guessing.
And because there wasn't anything in it that's unsuitable, because there's no bad language, there's no nudity, there's no like violence that you'll see in on screen.
Yeah, the only thing you see is he comes on and shoots a gun, but he's firing off screen, and then you get the Hornets, which we've already established are evil, falling out of the sky, and you don't see why, so it doesn't really mean anything.
And I mean, so the aardvark dies with like the things, and it gets pulled up and all the rest of it, but let's not forget Never-Ending Story.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's exactly where I went with that as well.
Yeah.
It's the same death. It's that slow, just disappearing off screen, being absorbed by something else, and it's just sort of agonizing and slightly heartbreaking. I think, had I seen that as a child, that would probably have traumatized me as much as Never-Ending Story did.
Yeah, but again, it's not particularly violent, so it's not something.
No, absolutely not.
As a
kid, it's sad because his friend has been taken away, and you won't necessarily know that it's died because it depends on what your sort of childhood experience is like. But all you know is that his friend's been taken away by something that looks sinister and sounded a bit mean, and you don't really know where it went.
Yeah,
and that's a sad thing for kids.
Yeah, but as you say, it's never violent, it's never horrific, or anything like that. I do wonder, like, you're right, I do wonder if it's traumatizing to a certain extent, but we'll never know because I didn't watch it as a kid.
It is a little bit.
It says a lot. It tells us a lot.
But ironically enough, the thing that really traumatized me about it, and I think this is the reason why it stuck with me, is bear in mind, a lot of this went over my head and I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
But I was following it enough to know that there is a small child and his family has died and he knows that people are coming to rescue him and he is waiting to be rescued by these people. Mm. And these people have, and I didn't remember that they went to see the old guy and all the rest. So I couldn't remember how the old man ended up on the ship. I just knew the old man was on the ship, but the old man dies before they get to the child. And it's when he dies, you see that he's got the metal plate in his head because he was the child. And I was just like, fuck, so the child, they're going to rescue him, but they're doomed to fail because he's already...
Yeah.
But they kind of... But he's also, because he's with them, they have kind of succeeded in their goal, but nobody knew it and realised it until it was too late and that passed on. And so that was the thing that is the reason why it stayed with me. And that, like, there's that existential crisis, which is so fucking French, really messed me up in a lot of ways, because it's like, what is the worst thing that you could do to a character? In my mind, it's that.
Yeah, yeah, just like, stick them in a time loop, a perpetual time loop forever.
Yeah, where that hope is constantly on the horizon, but just as it gets there, it gets snuffed out, and you realise that actually, if you looked sideways as opposed to linearly, and you'd taken in your surroundings and thought sort of like laterally and like looked at the people around you and dug a little bit more into these people that you thought you would be friends with, you would have realized this and you would have known this, because they were just like, oh yeah, we knew he got rose by these people and we knew that he did all of these things. And it's like, if you ever had actually had that conversation with this old guy before he passed, you would have been able to put it together. But because you never had that conversation, the opportunity for you to have it is gone. And that is like,
yeah,
my little mind was blown and so therefore traumatized.
Yeah, it's the one part of the narrative that I'm struggling with, right? It's the one plot hole that I can't quite join the loop on, because when they first meet the pirate, and obviously I kind of knew the narrative because you told us, so I kind of knew what to do. So when they meet like the old pirate guy, they go to see him specifically because he spent a lot of time on the planet where the kid is, and they never say why or how or anything like that. But then it goes on to say, like, in the end, it explains that because of the time shift, it was so traumatizing for him that he repressed all of those memories and he forgot who he was. So he has no knowledge that he was ever that little kid. But then if he spent that much time on the planet, you'd think that would have kind of unlocked that. So I struggled with that, because it was either...
Yeah.
It's either the implication is that he's gone back and spent time on the planet, in which case you think that would trigger something, or that the time they're referring to that he spent on the planet was when he grew up there as a kid, but he doesn't remember that, so it can't be that. Mm. So I was struggling with that a little bit. That was the only bit that I couldn't wrap my head around. The rest of it was all time travel bollocks that I'm fine with. It's just like, yeah, we shifted the planet back 60 years. You got caught in the time stream, so you all got knocked unconscious. Like, oh yeah, fine, all right, that's our rules.
Yeah,
it's fine. We can go with that. But yeah, I couldn't reconcile that. I think that really, that baked my Sweden out as an adult, let alone as a kid.
But then, this is what the reason why I think I remembered it so clearly was because it niggled. And there was something that, as a kid, that I was struggling to understand, because I was aware that this was slightly beyond what I was understanding. So I was trying to work it out. And because I was trying to work it out, I was going, because it's the bits with the kid and the old man were the things that I remembered, because that was what I was fixated on. And that's what I went over and over and over and over and over again, to the point that the sequence where he's on the planet with like the sort of the hive mind with all of like the sort of the angel figures and the rest of it, I'd completely forgotten that sequence existed until all of a sudden it started. And I was just like, oh, wait, hang on a second. That bit completely flew past me in my recollections of it.
See, and that's interesting, because I think, and obviously I can only guess at this because I didn't watch it as a child, but I think had I watched this as a kid, it's that sequence that would have stuck with me, is that bit on that planet with the faceless angels and the hive mind and all of that. I think because it's so stylistically different to the rest of the film as well. Once you get in, those angels are these big towering presence and they've got the jagged wings and they're faceless, and then they start talking about how they're going to assimilate them, and you have to basically give in to the dark side in order to escape, and you have to fill yourself with hate and anger. Like, that would have terrified me as a small child, and that's, I think that's the thing I would have remembered. I would have carried that with me more so than the time travel stuff.
But this is also the reason why I'm convinced I saw the 87 version and not the 91, is because if I'd seen the 91, I would have remembered that sequence and that would have been the thing that stuck with me. But all of that with the giving into yourself, I didn't understand what was going on. Like, I was too young to comprehend that. So I just saw the sort of the angels and there was a light and then one of them went into it and he didn't get out and the other one ran away. Like, I didn't understand that whole, you have to destroy yourself in order to destroy it. Yeah. Like, that whole notion, too much for me to get. But little boy is actually the man, because there is the visual link between the two of them. But how does that work? And because it's not like 100% clear in it, the reason why that bit I could get, but I was aware that I was like, I feel like I'm missing a piece. I don't get how this works. And so that was what was then the cycle that continued.
Yeah.
So ironically, if they'd done that ending bit a little bit better, I probably would have forgotten that this even existed.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have bugged you for so long.
Yeah.
Alexa, I think the ending's fine. I think it works. It's so sudden, because there's been no mention of the Time Masters or anything up to this point, and it's just so sudden.
I thought I'd missed something.
Yeah. Yeah, so did I. Because like I say, all the way through, I was like, who are the Time Masters? Are these guys the Time Masters? Is the kid the Time Master? Where's the Time Masters? What's going on?
Well, that was the thing. All the way through, I was thinking, right, well, Aaron, where does time come into this? Because we've seen no fucking time travel. I mean, part of me is expecting Time Cop, I've got to be honest. And it's just like, hang on, we're now 70 minutes into a 79-minute film. Where the fuck? What the fuck's going on? Where's the time?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
all of a sudden, it's like, bang, here we go.
Yeah, now we're wrapping up now. Yeah.
Because bear in mind, I couldn't remember that it was called Time. That's about when you said it's called Time Masters, I was like, that's a weird name for this show. Because their existence in this, despite the fact they're the title of it, completely didn't register at all.
Yeah.
Wasn't there. Like, I genuinely thought that it was going to be something like a rescue mission or like the name of a planet or something, because I was just like, that was the main thing. And it also, ironic, I had it pegged in my head as being about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I thought it was about 40 minutes. But again, because there's all the sort of the long sequences, like when they're swimming and they're having the conversations and when the police board the ship and all of the other sort of pirates are there and they're working at all of that was completely erased. So if you sort of cut those moments out of it, you are probably left with about 40 minutes, which is them actively communicating to the child, which is like the main story thread.
Yeah. The back and forth between them and Mike, isn't it, is the microphone. I forget the kid's name begins with P.
Peel.
That's it, yeah. That main narrative, you're probably right, is about 40 minutes. The rest of it doesn't need to be there, but it all works fine.
It doesn't detract, though, does it?
No, it doesn't subtract. It's all world building is the thing. And when we're dealing with sci-fi, that's really important. Like, it does help us to understand the rules of the world a little bit. You know, like when the angels all get turned back and then all of a sudden they're all different races. And so you start to understand, like, how big this galaxy is. Then you've got the one that can transform into things and they start hatching the plan. And it's all absolutely fine. And in particular, I think it's sort of character building for Jaffa Cake, whatever his name is. I forget his fucking name. Because that's the only point you really actually see him do fucking anything. Like, he hatches a plan there and they're all about to turn on him and they're like, oh, how dare you turn us over to the authorities? Like, we should have left you back with the angels or whatever. And he's like, no. Like, chill, dudes. You need your own ship. Yeah. Like, I'm fucking know what I'm doing here. Like, I'm captain of this ship. Just work with me.
Yeah.
That's the only point he really kind of mans up and does anything. Because other than that, he's basically just pressing buttons on the ship and looking cool. Like, he doesn't really do a lot, does he? Like, he goes down to the angel planet and then just fucks around a bit and gets told to go home. Like, he doesn't do much. So that's, I think that's kind of needed for that, just to give him his kind of hero moment as well.
But we not only that. I mean, we've talked so many times, certainly on Mario, about how things are. You'll occasionally, you know, you have things where they could probably shave about 20 minutes out. And here you don't get that, because if you lose that time, I think you're right. I think you lose his character, but also you lose a lot of the feel for it. And that's, you know, I mean, there's something I watched last year with Amy Adams. And she's a translator or a linguist.
Arrival.
That's the one. And that is very, very similar process in terms of how it manipulates time and things like that. And a lot of the way that succeeded was exactly the same as this, that they build out on this world or this universe where they don't go out of their way to make it actually, you see all the planets and you see all the shit, but actually they build up enough backstory where you think, actually, I actually give a fuck. And it's the same here, because you are engaged with all these other stories, so these story strands. And I think that was the thing that led me to think of potentially it would have been better as a serial, because you have all, you know, you're introducing all these things, but because they don't pay off at the end, the ones they pick up at the angel planet, the fact they disappear off, because none of that gets resolved, because it doesn't need to be. That's why it worked so well as a one-off. But that film kept on coming back to mind, because you got a very similar thing whereby it starts after it finishes, and it's constantly looping around for that reason. And I think because of that, this works really well, and you don't have that distraction.
It's a good comparison. I can see the Arrival comparison there with the narrative, and again with the type of sci-fi that this is. But I think, you know, ultimately I want it to be longer, not shorter, is the thing. I'll take an extra half an hour of this, and I don't care if that half an hour is just them moving on the ship, you know.
Yeah, there's a, normally we're saying we could take time off here. I think it would have benefited the other way because you can build up so much more of this universe that you're in.
You could. The trouble is animation, particularly then, was expensive. So it's like this won't have been cheap as it is, let alone to chuck another kind of 30-40 minutes on it. And actually, you know, credit where it's due, we're watching the dubbed version. So as I say, how well some of the narrative translates, I don't know. But as we've talked about a few times with some of the higher budget shows that we've looked at as well, like this script has got to go through so many passes before it goes into production, because you're not going to draw anything that you're not going to use. That's how animation works. It's very fucking expensive. So I think the fact that it holds together as well as it does is credit to everyone involved in the adaptation and the writing process. Like, they've obviously thought about, well, what do we need? What don't we need? The cynic in me says there's probably a certain marketing decision somewhere that says we need it to be a feature, so it's got to be at least 70 minutes. So if you know, maybe we'll chuck in the stuff with the swimming and stuff like that, because we've got to hit 70 minutes, otherwise it ain't a feature. So
I would almost go the other way, and I would say the reason why it's like 70 minutes and not 90, so you don't have that sort of like extra bulking out, because I do feel that the source material is probably there, because the one thing that you really do get with this is a sense of just how big and expansive space actually is. The fact that you've got this is like a significant, us to get to this place is going to be a significant period of time, and for like all of this movement and just like the different planets and the different races and just how different these things are is huge and immense. And it's a case of it's a scale that we're not really even touching on, because it's a case of you can't touch upon it. But bear in mind, this is the early 80s, and the early 80s, they like shit to be short.
They do like shit to be short, but you know, even in the early 80s, if you want to be a feature film, you've got to be like 70 minutes. Otherwise, you're a special at most.
You can't be
rocking up at 60 minutes and change, because everybody's just going to go, no, this is an animated special now. That's what this is.
So, yeah, but I think they hit 70 minutes to make it so that it was, they were like, you've got 70 minutes, as opposed to you can have longer, because I think...
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and like, I just feel that that's, it's not so much a sort of a marketing thing. It's just, it's a case of we won't be able to distribute it if it's longer.
Yeah, the preconceived notion of it, if it was any other length, is that, well, we don't know what this is. If it's shorter, it's an animated special. If it's longer, well, cartoons are normally about 70 to 80 minutes. And that's how it would have just worked in the 80s. You know, we hadn't had Pixar at this point, where all of a sudden you can make a two-hour animated movie and people will sit through it. You know, and also, like I say, just from a production standpoint, you know, we're not piling this through a hard drive. This is being hand-drawn, so it's very expensive. Yeah. So I think part of that comes into play as well. But it all works. It helps, you know, because of the style that it is. It's helped massively as well by the score. We haven't talked about it yet, but the soundtrack is gorgeous. It's absolutely amazing. I've been listening to it all weekend. It's just all synthwave, like proper 80s space opera. And it's so slow and just melodic, and it's brilliant. Like, the soundtrack is absolutely brilliant. It just hums away in the background the whole time. You know, the occasional time you get an action theme, like the opening titles, because you've got the chase going on, and it's got that really kind of almost traditional kind of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's almost stereotypical of this kind of like computerized beat. It's great. The soundtrack is absolutely phenomenal. And I think it plays a huge part in evoking that kind of sci-fi space feel. It's lifting a lot of heavy weight, that soundtrack.
Yeah, I think the only disappointment I had with it was, and it's because of the quality of the rip we've got, that every now and again it would dip out, and then you weren't quite sure whether it was fading, because it didn't just have cut off. It's a popped and then it quietened down a bit and then it picked up again. And it took a while to realize it wasn't intentional. It was just shit.
Shit
quality.
No. It's intentional, Marcus, so they don't get stung for copyright and demonetized.
No. It's not intentional for the production. That's what was annoying with me, because it ruined what was a very good soundtrack.
Yeah, it's just because they would have got flagged. But the soundtrack is fully available, again, legally. Yeah. But if you get on the YouTubes and just type in it, you'd like, you can listen to it all. Fire up the YouTube music. It's all there. So,
but part of that as well, I think, is like, because I actually watched like the guy talking about the introduction to it before the film started, because I was just like, I just want the validation before I start watching this. I'm not even going to lie. Like, that was what it was about. And then when he was just like, oh, my God, this is, you know, heavy metal is like a cult classic, but this one is actually possibly an even bigger undiscovered gem, and I've never heard of anyone that's seen it. And I was just like, I have. But then he was talking about how he'd found it like burnt onto like a VHS, and I was just like, yeah, do you know the reason why it's like cropped like it is because he's done the direct VHS rip, because I've ripped some like VHS tapes for my dad for his engineering projects, and the thing is that especially when you've got these older tapes from the 80s, when you're like transferring them to digital, you get a lot of just distortion and just unusableness like round the edges of the film, which is where the edges of the video is, so you just kind of have to sort of like crop it out a bit, and the sound does tend to like pop and crackle a bit as well.
I think some of this
is because it's literally just that's the best rip that he could get, because as we said, the English dub does not exist.
No, it's analog media for you. It's part of the beauty of it. But I think in this instance, the majority of it is quite simply so he doesn't get a strike. We know how YouTube works, guys. That's it. You know, if you dip out every few seconds, you'll be absolutely fine. It won't recognize it. And that's probably the only reason why it's still up there. Because he's managed, sooner or later, it's going to get pulled down. So, you know, listeners, if you are listening to this, it's now January 2025. If you do want to watch this right now, you can find it. Look next month, maybe you can't. I don't know.
No guarantees.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty difficult to get hold of. But I would recommend you do. I fucking loved it. I say, I'm just sorry that I don't have the nostalgia for it that I wish I did. Because I think, if I'd have watched it as a kid, like Helen, I would have been super pumped to watch this. Like, super, super pumped. And I think I probably would have forgotten all about it until now. And so then watching it again, I'd be like, oh, this is amazing. It's brilliant. There's no merchandise that I can see for
nothing.
I've done a merch check. There's nothing. Okay. Like, it has literally just vanished into oblivion, which is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It's bizarre.
But I thought it was great. What a way to kick off 2025. Like,
Thank you very much for humouring me when I was like, do you remember this show?
Well, look, it was going to go one of two ways, wasn't it? It was either going to be like, it didn't exist, and then we could have had an hour of you just ranting like a lunatic, which also would have been entertaining.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or we found it, which we did. So.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, I mean, I've enjoyed this. I was watching, I was trying to think of things that I would have possibly done differently. And as when we got to the end, as I said, it kind of came together for me. But I think if I'd seen this as a kid, most of it would have gone over my head, and I possibly would have remembered particular visuals or things like that. But I wouldn't have remembered enough about it to have the sort of the effect that you've had with it, Helen. Watching it now, I'm looking and thinking, I've really enjoyed this as a middle-aged man. And whether I'd have enjoyed it as a kid or not, I don't know. And I don't really give a fuck because I enjoyed it now. And that's kind of where I'm coming out from. So, yes, you're welcome that we're here with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Also, I'm very proud of just how good my visual memory was of it.
I've got to say, Helen, like the way you described it was like, it was bang on. As I was watching it, I almost had like,
it was
a
fucking
mental checklist
but it was bang
of stuff you had said. I was like, yep. Like you...
People give me shit and they're just like, oh, you're misremembering this thing. And I'm just like, no, if I tell you I remember this clearly, I fucking remember this clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know better than to argue with your like mega ADHD brain when it's firing on all cylinders. Like I know better. So like when you're 100% convinced of something like this, I'm like, yeah, it must be out there. And yeah, it, like literally as I was watching it, it was just like, yeah, tick, 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 Hornets, Metal Plate, Crash, just ticking all of these things off. It was like you could write the synopsis for this film, I think, based on the way you described it for us.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have any of the subplots.
No, nothing about the angels or anything like that, but definitely all the time travel stuff would have been in it. Yeah. What's interesting about that is all the promo art for it seems to focus very heavily on those angels as well. Yeah. I was waiting for them to show up the whole film.
Yeah.
So the fact that you didn't remember them was quite interesting as well. Because they're almost like, they're kind of built up to be the big bad when you look at all the promo stuff. And they're in it for like five minutes at most. They're just a sequence. So that's quite interesting as well. Maybe they're a bigger part of the book. I don't know. Am I going to read the book?
Maybe.
No, because it's French. So
I mean, if I can find a translation, I might.
Part of me feels that maybe I subconsciously took this in because I did always have a problem with conformity as a child to quite a hair-tearing level for my parents. And I'm like, maybe it's because like that thing did actually stick in, that conforming is bad and therefore one must not conform. And that carried it through, but it just didn't ping with me because it wasn't an aardvark. I know I keep calling it an aardvark and it's not an aardvark, but it's the closest thing I can describe to what it looks like.
The name of that thing, like I tried to write the name down and I was like, you know what?
Well,
that's how they say it, but have you seen it written down? It's fucking...
No.
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm not writing it down. We'll just call it whatever we're going to call it. So aardvark is where I went with it as well. It's like it's like a tall aardvark, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
It kind
it's
of
like a horse with an aardvark's head.
Yeah, kind of. It sort of reminds me, and I guess it's because of the aardvark thing, kind of reminded me of, do you remember like the Pink Panther cartoon? But not the Pink Panther. You'd have the bit in the middle with the anteater. Yeah. I can't think what his name was.
Yeah.
But sort of reminded me of that, but kind of squashed, basically.
That makes sense.
The aardvark thing anyway. But yeah, Time Masters, like, get on it now, listeners, while it's still available.
While it's still there, because before it goes back 60 years, you can't find it.
Yeah, because it will probably get pulled. So
yeah, and it does exist, and this is not a mass hallucination.
It does exist. Yeah. We never doubted you for a second.
Absolutely. There's no way you could have described it that vividly if it didn't exist.
The twin has for so many years. I have just been dismissed for so many years. No, it's Ulysses 31. Helen, shut up. It doesn't exist. You're thinking of Ulysses 31.
Have you sent her the link?
Well, she was there in the room with us when we found it. So she's not watched it, but when we found it and I've showed her the advert for it and she was just nah.
Well,
no, I don't remember that.
I don't think I would have ever accused you of confusing it with Ulysses 31.
No.
There was a moment where I did think that maybe you were just having a mad fever dream, but I was sure you hadn't confused it with anything else, at least.
Yeah, because you can't, really.
No.
It is very much it's very much on its own.
It certainly is. And it's brilliant. Thank you for bringing our attention to it. Like, I'm glad we've watched it. It was definitely the right fit for this show and not Mario, because it's too good to go on to Mario.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't just recommend shit.
No. It was very, very good. I feel like we've probably got a problem this year on this show now, because I looked at our list earlier to see what we've got coming up on
the
schedule. I don't think any of it's going to be as good as this. So, but then who knows? We're watching the Wuzzles next week. So.
Well, exactly.
No. I mean, if it helps, I can tell you the other film that was traumatizing for me for very different reasons as a child, because Fiona made me watch it whenever it was her turn to pick the video from the video shop.
Go for it.
Which was?
The Last Unicorn.
Fuck me, The Last Unicorn. I'd forgotten that even
existed.
I
hate it so much.
I don't know if I've seen that. I may have seen it and repressed it. I don't know, but it's not ringing a bell.
I'd forgotten it even existed.
It's fucking bleak.
It's super bleak.
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch it now, though, Helen.
Check it on the list.
Just saying, if you're wanting something for the list, that's the other big one. It was this one and The Last Unicorn were my two, like, really pivotal memories.
I mean, if we're breaking into actual films, we do shows on this show normally. Yeah. We've had the occasional, like, Christmas special and stuff like that. But if we're going into films, I'd have to throw Animal Olympics into the mix. But, you know, because that was the animated film that I always watched. But this is about the TV shows primarily, both cartoons and live actions. But maybe we can shunt The Last Unicorn over onto the other show Depending on how shit it is, we don't really know is the problem. Well, so maybe we should Google it and find out. Well, yeah, but we don't want to watch it and find out it's like this and it's really good. And then we're going to have a problem dumping on it. So I'll do a little bit.
I don't think Helen will have a problem. Look on her face. I don't think Helen will have a problem.
No.
I'll do a little research and we'll see. I've got nothing else to say about this. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't, unfortunately, have the baggage to wax lyrical about it like I would do with some of the other shows that we talk about. All I can say is I think it's fucking brilliant. As an adult, as Mark said, as like middle-aged Chris, I had a great time with it. I'm going to watch it again in French, definitely, because I'm interested to see what the difference is. If it was available, I'll be honest, I'd probably put some money down for it.
Same.
But it's not, so I can't. So I'll try and watch the French version as quickly as possible, so that it's not chopped up into like 27 different parts as well. But I thoroughly recommend it to everyone listening. It's like, go out and have a look at Time Masters while you can.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
I've
got nothing. Yeah, I've got nothing to add. I think we've covered everything. But it's an interesting one because we always also ask for feedback from listeners, and sometimes we get some good feedback. Sometimes we get shat on by fans of Raggy Dolls. But yeah, if people do remember this, or thought they remembered something akin to this, but then were told it was Ulysses 31, and have kind of forgotten about it, I would love to know what people's recollections are, because this is so. This came so out of fucking left field to begin with, and it was such a pleasant surprise. I'd love to know what people's thoughts on it are. So yeah, as always, get in touch on Twitter at SMPDpod. Go to our website, ddpodcast.net, where you can also pick up our other shows and episodes of the show. Where we get your podcasts from, subscribe, leave a message, and we'll get back to you as best we can. Until next time.
See you later.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Since Mark didn't thank you in the outro.